April 12, 2005. My name is Lindsay Bell, and I'm interviewing World War II veteran James Edgar Bell. What was your life like before the war?
Well, we had a nice family. My mother died when I was very young, and my dad wouldn't, the whole family was in Canada at that time, and my dad decided that my mother was very handicapped, and my dad decided to take us to United States, to Montana, because there was a lot of employment and stuff here, or whatever his other reasons were, I have no idea. However, we came to Havre, Montana, and my dad worked for a butcher shop because he'd been in the stock market all of his life in Canada, and he worked there, and then he bought a grocery store. And we done real good in this little grocery store in Havre. It was down by the railroad tracks. And it seemed that all the relatives from over there, that my aunts and uncles, came over. And eventually my uncle bought a store over there across the railroad tracks. And then my Uncle Amos, he owned the Amos Meat Market in Havre. So they were, we were doing all right until 1938. And we had a flood. And it put my dad completely out of business. The store flooded and the floors came up and everything else, and we run that for 12 years, I think it was, in Havre. But anyway, we moved to Billings. Dad sent myself and my oldest sister to Billings. And they moved us here for nothing, a fellow that owned Dad a grocery bill. And he told Dad if he would, why he would take us to Billings. And we could find a place to rent. And my oldest sister and I came by ourselves with him. And they would call his debt to my dad fair. And that's the way they paid it. And so I rented a house. I was just a young punk guy then. But Dad, I was with him most of the time. And my dad, he when we had the store, he made a lot of good friends, and we run a charge accounts, you know. But I remember I used to count his money for him at night, and he would say, well, we got that done, Jim. And my oldest brother wasn't in good health. He had asthma awfully bad. Anyway, I really enjoyed it, and I was awful close to my dad. But as time went on and we moved over here, my dad's brother took my brother from Havre and took him back to Harris, Pennsylvania to leave, because it was too much for my dad to handle. And then my dad hired a housekeeper for us, see. And Dad eventually married her. And anyway, after several years, of course, like I say, he married her, but we weren't rich people. But according to standards, we done without very little. We had an old Victory 6 Dodge car. Of course, cars were cheap then, you know. Mm. Not very many people. A lot of people had them, I guess, but the economy and that kind of stuff wasn't much interest to us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got to Billings, my dad finally got up here and he said, "What in the Sam Hill matter with you? I rented a house over on South 39th for $35 a month." And we started looking for another cheaper renter place, you know, and we found it over on Jackson Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a house and it was set kind of crooked on the lot. And my dad, he made the lady a deal about it. And he took this old Victory 6 Dodge and we pushed the house back onto the part of the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was going to school. And anyway, things were entirely different than what they were today. You never stop and realize how things can change so quick.
Mm-hmm.
But we made it good, and we had a lot of friends. And as we went on, we progressed as we went. And I went through high school here. And I was the first graduating class from senior high.
Wow.
And then my stepmom and I, all of us, I had two sisters, Nancy and Shirley. And Nancy had cancer real bad, and I lost her at the age of 39. And Shirley at the age of 40, and then Harry, my brother, died. I believe he was 60. But I was always home. The other kids didn't live at home. Nancy got married a few times, and you know, just one of those things. And so I more or less took care of my parents. And I worked part-time at different jobs at the old Sawyer store by the South Side Railroad tracks there. And I had a good time with them. And as time went on, I decided that I wanted to get out jobs were good in Utah at that time, somebody told us. So two of my friends and I got the money together and we took off and went to Utah, Ogden, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to work out at a lumber mill out there. And we had real good intentions. But we worked there quite a while, and I always sent money home to help my folks. But Dad called me one time, and he said, "Hey, Jim," he said, "I just got a..." My dad was naturalized, and all of us kids were on the paper, see.
Mm-hmm.
We assumed. And anyway, well, my dad took his citizenship papers out and we become citizens. So anyway, Dad called me in Utah and he said, "Say, Jimmy," he said, "the Canadian government called and wants you to go to war." And I said, "Why?" I said, "I ain't going to war over there, you know, for them or anything. I was doing pretty good here."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well," I had an uncle that was a Bannister Law in Canada, and he was a Queen's counselor. And he said, well, I get a hold of Les, and I'm sure he'll take care of things. So I said, okay. So I telling the guys about it, see. And I thought it was kind of funny, you know, so I didn't think too much about it, but I thought, I just don't like that idea. There's something wrong. So I told the two of them, Gilbert Leake was my good friend, and Chuck Lovelace, and we said, oh, the heck with it, why don't we just enlist in the service and all three go? Fine. So, okay. Well, they were pretty particular at that time, and I was awful short.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, they couldn't get into the, they didn't take me in then, and at that time, and so we kept going and going, and finally I went to the Coast Guard, and he said, well, okay, we'll, I was just a little of the short side, so I stood on a book. And so anyway, when I went into the Coast Guard, so then I come home, and I was home about a month or so, and they called me. So then I went out to California, and I went to Alameda, California. And I went through boot camp there. So I had a good education. I worked with them, you know, as they wanted. And I done what I could. They put us all through training, and I stood, learned to stand watch, and it was an outfit that, it was the loneliest Christmas I ever spent in my life, you know. And anyway, I learned to take guns apart and put them together and such stuff, you know. And then they put you through a physical training that would eat your heart out, you know. And boy, you done what they told you, or you stood guard. I stood clothesline watch, and I stood guard under a bridge all night, or, you know, for certain many hours. And then they finally decided to take us, and I went to they sent us up to these beaches. They were I stood dog watch. We trained with dogs up on these beaches, and the first one we were at was Stenson Beach, north of California, and we were trained with the dogs to keep them on the beach, and they'd pick up the scent of anybody that was on the beach, in the rocks or anything, and then you could watch the water. And then I was there for training quite a while, and then they sent me to Mirror Beach, and it was the same process. And then I went up to Point Reyes, and I have pictures of my, here's the picture of some of the dogs that we had.
Okay.
And this here's the point by in uniform when I was working in a beach. And that was just, I was there for quite a while. And then they, here's the picture that I had. You remember that? Did you ever see it?
I think so, yeah.
Well, I had that. And then they, I went to Point Reyes. And I was there for a while, and then they decided to break some of them up, I guess, and they picked so many men, they took us into San Francisco to Bay and Powell.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went through a training period there. They were getting ready to ship us out. And before I went up there, they sent me to landing bar school down to Coronado Beach, I think it was, in California.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down there and learned to operate a barge, a landing barge. And I remember I was bringing a bunch of officers back in one of the officers' crafts, and it was kind of a fancy outfit, you know. And so I come back, and I went over a wave, but I think I hit it at the wrong direction, and I soaked them down. So I don't think I did too good on that job. But anyway, why they took us into California there, and at the pier, and I was there, and we would go and stand watch, and pretty soon they taught us to jump, and they took us swimming. They, you know, it was a training thing that they run you through, and so I got up on this ladder, and I went out there, and that swimming pool was like a little teeny square box down there, you know, to me, because I'd never been like that, you know, but I could swim good and whatnot. But so anyway, I stood there, and he said, "Well, go ahead and jump, Bill." And "Oh, no." And he said, "Well, I'm coming up, and I'm going to push you off there if you don't." So I finally got up the gumption to jump, and that turned out all right. So I had an uncle that lived in San Francisco. His name was John Diamond, my stepmother's brother.
Okay.
And, Spike was his name. Anyway, he lived there, and he had a boy, and he worked for a shipyard there. And I could go over and visit him, you know, when we were on Liberty in San Francisco at Bay and Powell. And the training was good. After you kind of loosen up and know that what they say, they're the ones that's going to tell you. And they were very good, and they were real good about it. But finally, they loaded us aboard. They went aboard the USS Cambria, and it came back from the East Coast. And I have a story of the whole history of the ship.
Oh,
so
great.
I have. I had it here a minute ago. Anyway, I've enjoyed it. Here.
Okay.
You can take that and get information out of it and put in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great.
And if you just save this stuff when you... Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I went aboard there, and I never did get seasick, you know, but it was kind of it wasn't all trouble and war. We crossed the international date line.
Mm-hmm.
And when you first go to sailing and you're a sailor, you're a polywog. Well, when you cross it, then you go become a lollipop and not a lollipop. What am I talking about? I'll think of it.
Okay.
Anyway, we crossed the international date line, and the way they done that, they filled one of the holes on the ship full of water in a tent, I think, or in a canvas thing, and they put King Neptune up on the on the thing, and he had a great big round foam thing fastened to his belly, and then he'd call you up there, and then he'd stick your face in that foam thing, and it was amusing, from a polywog to a frog, I guess, or what it was. But anyway, we enjoyed it, and finally, we went into action, and I have the record of what places I've been and what awards I've handed, you
okay.
know, and I look back on it now, and the reason that I really didn't want to not go, I wanted to go, and yet everybody was against me in the family except my father, the Wilsons, because they were all Jehovah Witnesses.
Okay.
And I kind of wanted to go bad enough, and then I said, well, I'm going to go anyway. And so I did. Well, I had an uncle that was a minister in the Jehovah Witnesses, and the whole Wilson clan was Jehovah Witnesses, but the Bell clan wasn't. And so, of course, when that happened, they had very little to do with me, you know, after I went. And
even after you got back?
Pardon?
Even after you got back?
Yeah, they never had much to do with me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the only one that really stuck with it, and I'm glad from my standpoint of view, is my older brother stayed. He was a Jehovah Witness, and he never treated me wrong or abusive or anything that way, but he just didn't have anything to do with me. And my aunts and uncles were the same. My Aunt Hazel, I went and seen her several times here, and they all moved over here. In Canada, and so as time went on, I didn't have too much to squawk about. So, but I enjoyed, and I met a lot of great guys when I was in the service, and during the service, I tried several different options. They kind of switch you around, you know, to find out what you're capable of doing and what you're not capable of doing. And I'm one that was not capable of doing certain things, like being in a gun turret and strapped in one of those 20 millimeters or 40 millimeter guns, because I tried it, and I was strapped in there, and so they told me to go ahead and fire. So I did, and it just took and shook to the living daylights out of me. And so that was a short trip. So I went over the side a few times in the barges, and finally the officer said to me one day, he said, "You know, Bell, you ought to go down in the galley." And I said, I don't care, you know. And so I did. I went down in the galley. And here's some pictures here of one of them and me in the galley there. And when you were topside on the ship, you always wore a belt, these here. And what you would do, they had a little gas cap in them, and it was from sinking. See, and what you do if you jump in the river and weren't a great swimmer, you could push them keys together and it would inflate.
Oh, okay.
And this was a very good friend of mine in that service there. And we really enjoyed the things that we did have. We had a board ship, we had a barber shop, we had a laundry, and a tailor, and we had everything that was available to most people, you know, on the ships. And then of course we stood bow watches, and used to watch for bamboo poles sticking out of the water, because that the Japs would come up, you know, when you were close to the island, and they would stick a bomb on you, or they would, if you're asleep at night, they'd crawl up that chain, see, the anchoring chain and stuff. But we seemed to be on the move a lot. We brought some, we had some wounded back, and so we did. And here's another friend of mine that was in the service with me, old Benoit. And of course, the best part of it, you know, is when you're when you're on a liberty. And these here are some more pictures that I had on bow watch and stuff. And these are
well, these are great.
This is taken over in Hawaii, them during Liberty, you know. And you can tell by the looks of it. And anyway, well, there was a very serious moment, you know, when I was in the galley. We had 90 gallon coppers, and I think there was either four or six that you'd done your cooking in, and your breakfast was all in steam tables, and they fed real well, there was no doubt about that, and I learned a lot of cooking in there. And which I used when I came back, because I went back to sailing again, sailing between Seattle and Alaska. But anyway, why another thing that we had aboard ship was we had a funeral, and I'll show you the picture of the funeral and the information on it.
Okay.
And if you would like, you could keep the copy some of that and put it in your report, and either friends that I had in this right here, for instance, is was a very good friend of mine, and we were at Liberty there. Here was another short guy, and he was short, about the same size. But anyway, these are some of the fellows that these two boys were brothers,
mm-hmm.
and they were from Haver. And this is my cousin Don, and this was my or I always called him a cousin because Spike, my stepmom's brother, married this lady in San Francisco. But we were in a car accident too, him and I, and he had a bad spot in his back, so they wouldn't take him. He got discharged. And Babe Good and Johnny Good, and they were both from Haver, where we lived with the grocery store.
Okay.
And knew them well. They lived about two blocks from us, and they both survived the war.
Good.
And other than that, one was taken in Shanghai, China. When the war ended, I was docked in San Pedro, California, for repairs and stuff. And my wife and I got Liberty and come home and got married, is what I did, on leave, see. And then I went back, and when I got into San Pedro, I sent for my wife, and she came out, and she went aboard the ship with me, and I showed her around the ship, and things like that. And then we were sitting in the theater at night, and all the lights come on, and they said that the war was over. So, boy, were we tickled, you know. So, I told Marge, I said, well, maybe I'll get to go home with you anyway, you know. But after I got back, to the ship the next day, there was a message that we had one more trip to make, and it was to Shanghai, China. So I went to Shanghai, China, and then after that, I came back. I come to find out later on in life, when I was married and had all of the children, I was hauling supplies from Seattle, Alaska Airport. Hauling supplies from down on the waterfront, and my brother-in-law, Bob Voschel, he owned a tugboat, and he knew I cooked in the service, so he called me and he said, Jim, why don't you guys come on out here? And you can go on the ship with me. I had been home quite a while, and I'd went through a business here in Billings at one time, and as time went on, it was time for me to get out, and I sold a bar. And Marge went out ahead of me. And Bob, I told Marge I'd stay home and get things straightened up, so we went on out there, and I went to work with Bob out there. And I sailed for 3 years. And then Mom and I, Marge and I decided to come home. And my dad had passed away. And so I wanted to be with my mother and take care of her, because my brother, he was not doing too good. He was in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I sent him the money to come home and found out he was an alcoholic and one thing or another. And then my wife and I helped my dad build those houses over on Roosevelt Avenue across from the Orchard School. Mm-hmm. And I was telling Sandy the other day that one house that I sold her in for future years was sitting on 16 cement blocks. Then Dad and I built the other house so he could have an income. But anyway, I had a good time and had no problems. And the odd thing was about it, when I was sailing for Bob, the Coast Guard come up alongside of us, and he says to my brother-in-law, he says, "You got a foreigner on your ship." And Bob says, "I do?" And he said, "No, I don't." And he said, "Yes, you do." And he said, "His name is Bell, James Bell." And somewhere or other in the process of it all, my name didn't show up on my dad's citizenship papers, as far as I ever knew. Because I met the fella and the officer and told him, you know, that I'd served in the Coast Guard and whatnot. And so anyway, Bob told him, he said, "Well, I'll see that he gets back to Seattle, but I've got to take this voyage through." And they told Bob, they knew him, so they said, "All right." And he said, "And as far as you're concerned, Mr. Bell," he said, "when you get back, you better get naturalized." So I was naturalized in Seattle, Washington, when I got back off that trip.
Okay.
So it was kind of a hassle, you know. But anyway, if there's any questions you want to ask me, or... the thing that amazed me mostly, that I really enjoyed doing, was we would have some troops aboard and sometimes we wouldn't. But I learned how to make ice cream, and so they ordered it, the powder and all of that stuff. And then I had a little room across from the galley where I had the freezers and stuff. And then we would hold our movies. And when we were sailing and not in action, we would have a movie, and when they'd go into the to sit down, they'd pass my window, and then I'd hand them the ice cream, you know, in cups. And we'd done that for recreation. And then we had boxing. They had boxing. And so our recreation wasn't cut off completely. And I couldn't say anything. One thing about it, when we took troops over, you never had trouble getting them a mess cooked for the galley. Everybody wanted to eat and, you know, get down where the stuff was, mm-hmm. you know. And we had some good fellas, and I met a lot of Army guys through that way, and we had some Marines. But the thing was, you know, they it was still the separation of the colored people and the whites. However, I was never brought up in a neighborhood where the color made much difference from the standpoint of Japanese people or like that, see. But we, I had met a few colored fellows aboard, and because they slept right back of the galley, or down off the side to the galley, you know. Mm-hmm. And one fellow I had was a big, great big strapping colored guy, and well built, you know, and he'd go down and bring up the meat for us. And he ate a lot of lamb, and you better eat it while it's warm. But we ate a lot of lamb, a lot of hamburger, and we had steaks. And truthfully speaking, we were a lot of people had better food there than they had at home, mm-hmm. you know, in them days. And this colored fellow, he was really, really a nice fella. And I never had anything against him, but I'd never seen him except when we'd call him to go down to the chief cook or the, who was in, he would call and have him bring up the meat that we'd need. And then we had a regular butcher shop there. And he covered up with these carcasses up and one thing and another. And a good butcher. And then across, we were in the center. And on the other side of us was the bakery. And we used to, they used to bake bread over there. And they would, in early in the morning when I was on, get up, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they'd be baking bread, and then they'd bring me over a loaf, and then I'd tear the inside of the stuffing out of it, you know, the bread, and then put a block, a small block of butter in it and shake it, you know, and melt it. Boy, that was delicious, I tell you, that really was. And I hope I showed you a picture of, oh, really, down here. This is the crew that I was, some of the crew that was topside, and some of them were cooks and whatnot. Here are some more of the crews. They were bakers and such. Here I am with them, and we got a Jap outfit anyway, but the air raids were tremendous, you know. Golly, we went through hundreds of them, Jap planes flying, you know, and then you had to stand watch at night. You had everything, you had to be alerted. You'd have to see that nobody was, they had these little boats that they'd go underwater with, you know, and you'd never, this is part of the crew here. And it's an odd, kind of odd thing too, that how small the world really is in one way, and then in another it's awful big. But when I was over during one invasion, when they had one of the ships got hit, or anyway, it put a hole in the side of the ship or split it open or something to that effect. And they brought the crew over to our ship. And when they did, two of the guys from Billings were on it, and they were the Schnurr brothers, Pete Schnurr and I forget the other one's name now. But anyway, I've seen And she had one, she had three boys, and they were all in the, on APA ships.
Mm-hmm.
Ours was APA 36. And they were all, I met them, they come walking through the chow line.
Oh, wow.
So it was quite a surprise to see them. And Tony was the other boy's name. Anyway, why, that's no good. If you want to, I'd like to show you in here. If you come in here with me, I'll show you in there. This was the picture of the ship that I, the picture of the ship that I was on, see.
Okay.
And so
okay.
It was, and this was the tugboat that I was on, pulling barges out of Seattle. So, is there anything else I could tell you?
Medals.
Yeah, well.
Lots.
Yeah, you know, they have, I got 5 bronze stars. And then they changed it to where they said when you was in 5 actions, you got a silver star. Well, I got the 4, and then I put the silver star for my 5th one, see? And now they've changed where you can get rid of the 4 bronze ones and the 1 silver. But I'm not going to tear that all apart again. So, anyway, we had the 1 burial at sea.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very painful thing to watch because they were away from home. And I'm sure that the good Lord took care of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they wrap them in a canvas bag. And then they